follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome. I'm Randy Rolfe, your host for today, and our show, I'm so excited about it, is about when your child needs more and about special education, and we have a superb expert. Many parents today find that their children need special attention because of various disabilities which make it harder for them to benefit from conventional school programs. With all the cuts in school budgets today and classroom sizes increasing, special education seems even harder to arrange. Yet autism and related disorders are on the increase, and we have children with hearing and visual impairment as well as slowed development in various areas and other health and learning impairments. There are federal and state laws that require special education programs for these children, but obtaining appropriate help can seem overwhelming for parents. Today, I'm really pleased to welcome a true expert in this field, attorney Tanya Alvarado, will help us understand what resources are available under the law, what processes it takes, and when to seek an experienced attorney to help with the process. Just about everyone knows someone who has a child who needs extra help, so do listen in. Tanya Alvarado was born in Ecuador, South America, and is fluent in Spanish. She graduated from Cornell University in 1989, and since obtaining her law degree from Boston University College of Law in 1992, Ms. Alvarado, who has two disabled siblings, has dedicated her legal career to assisting disabled children and adults. Previously with the Disabilities Law Project, now called the Disabilities Rights Network, Tanya successfully litigated federal court challenges to policies which discriminated against the disabled, including obtaining reasonable accommodations, modifications of policies, ending employment discrimination and retaliation. In 2004, she joined McAndrews Law Offices, where she focuses on special education law. She's helped numerous children obtain independent educational evaluations and appropriate educational programs and private school tuition. She stays inspired by her clients' perseverance in their pursuit to learn and become independent contributing adults. So welcome, Tanya, I'm so excited to have you on our show. I really think this is an incredibly important area of the law, but also of helping families succeed and have their children succeed. So thank you for being on our show.
Oh, and thank you for inviting me, Randy. I'm really honored to be included in your program. I think this is an area that's very important for parents to learn about. And unfortunately, it's also an area where very few parents are aware of their children's rights.
Yes, I'm so pleased that we can help educate them that way. So I mentioned that you had two disabled siblings, so I'm sure that's part of what got you interested in these special education cases. Can you tell us a little more about how you got into that in your legal education?
Sure. With my two siblings, we were all born in Ecuador, South America. I had an older brother with severe mental retardation and a sister who's legally blind. when we came to the United States, my mom made a decision to keep my brother in Ecuador because she was afraid of the non-inclusive practices in the United States. We came to the United States in 1974, where there really wasn't inclusion of students with disabilities or children with disabilities in communities. And at that time, there wasn't a codified special education law protecting the children's rights. So I essentially grew up without my brother being in the household. My
wow.
sister, who is legally blind, did come with us to the United States. And as I mentioned, there wasn't a lot of there weren't a lot of services or protections at the time for students. So I essentially watched her be educated and grow in the United States with very limited services. And my parents also made a point to not limit her due to her physical disability. So I got I feel a firsthand experience in watching someone cope in an integrated setting with very few services and just kind of make her way through. And she's done great. She has a master's degree in social work. She works as a guidance counselor in a public school. And she's very successful. So I think those two experiences really kind of helped me form my career choices.
Oh, yes. Very moving story. And the role of your parents and you as their sister, just it's very moving. Can you talk a little more about how these laws did come to be since the 70s? They didn't exist back then.
Right. They're the first non-discrimination law pertaining to persons with disabilities was enacted in 1973 through the Rehabilitation Act. That was not a special education statute. What the Rehabilitation Act provides are protections for people with disabilities against discrimination, unequal treatment. It's similar to the laws, the civil rights laws that most people are familiar with in terms of non-discriminatory behavior against racial minorities or on a religious basis or ethnicity. In 1975, Congress enacted the Education for All Handicapped Children. That is the first law that was codified that specifically pertained to special education rights for children with disabilities. It required school districts to provide services, not only equal access to education, but actually different education for students who need with disabilities, who need the curriculum presented in a specific way that addresses their disability, or who also need some changes or modifications to the curriculum or their educational program so that they can make progress through their educational career. In 1990, the Education for All Handicapped Children was completely revamped, and it was renamed the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the IDEA, and it's maintained that name since 1990. It's been amended twice and reauthorized since then, most recently in 2004, but that is the primary statute that provides the educational entitlements to children.
Yeah, it's a fascinating history. It takes us a while to realize that education needs to include everybody, even if they learn a little differently or need some special attention. So how give us an idea of the numbers involved. What percentage of children in schools today do receive assistance or should receive assistance presently? If you have just some ballpark numbers for us to have a percent.
Well, mainly it depends on the school district where the child is residing. Pennsylvania has a wide variety of number of children who have been identified and enrolled as special education students. So, for instance, Westchester has a 12.7% enrollment in special education. Philadelphia School District has 13.2%. The highest percentage I found in the state of Pennsylvania is a 30.5% in Clarendon County, Clarendon City School District. And the Mars Area School District near Pittsburgh in Butler County has a 4.8% student enrollment in special education. So it's largely all over the map, basically in Pennsylvania. But those were the numbers.
And I expect you'd see that kind of variety in other states as well.
Yes. Largely, as I said, a large amount depends on the population within each county and within the school district itself. Some counties are not as populated as others.
Sure. So what's the best way for a parent to find out what their rights are in their own particular state?
One of the best ways to learn and educate yourself about special education is to go onto your state's Department of Education website. There are links in that website to special education. The websites have been very informative in terms of how to access special education rights. It summarizes the law in an understandable language so that parents and non-legal professionals who are trying to understand more about these laws can understand it. And it also has regulations and the law and some interpretations of the law so that parents can gain a full understanding of what their child's rights are.
That's really helpful, and it has been a good development that local governments have taken the initiative to educate the population through the internet about issues that can be incredibly complex, like getting special education can be. If a parent suspects or their school informs them that their child is struggling, what's the first thing they should do, Tanya?
The very first thing they should do is, if they suspect their child is struggling, first be able to articulate the struggles that the child is having. If they're having some difficulty reading at home, or even if they're seeming very frustrated when they're doing homework, or they try to avoid doing homework, they should talk to the teacher, find out what's happening, learn a little bit more about their child's struggles. But in terms of asking for an evaluation, and I always emphasize to parents that I meet, never hesitate to request an evaluation, a special education evaluation from their school district. The evaluation is free, and they make that request by writing a letter to the principal or to the director of the supervisor of special education at their child's school. In the letter, they should, in just layman's language, just plain language, explain the types of struggles they're watching their child have in relation to their education, and request a special education evaluation for their child.
Oh, that's neat.
Get the process started.
Yeah, that's very helpful. So to know that you can get that evaluation for free, just write a letter that's in your own language requesting that. That's wonderful. We're up on a break now, so please come back and hear more from Tanya Alvarado.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hello and welcome back. We're talking with Tanya Alvarado, an expert in special education and helping families get the appropriate education that their children need. And so Tanya, we were talking about when parents first discover that they do have ways of helping their child get the special education they need. Many parents don't realize that they can get this kind of help. Can you kind of outline or list the kinds of disabilities and developmental challenges that are covered?
Sure. The statute itself has 13 eligibility categories that identify specifically autism, learning disability. But one thing to bear in mind is it pretty much covers every disability. It covers everything except drug and alcohol abuse. So a lot of parents are hesitant because they feel that their child's struggles are not truly related to education. For instance, if they're avoiding homework or if they're truant, there's not an obvious link to a learning disability or an educational disability. But if one should bear in mind, it's really generally runs the gamut: reading disabilities, emotional needs, physical disabilities, deaf and hard of hearing, blindness, behavioral issues, and mental health issues are all covered under the statute.
That's great. I knew an adult who said when she was a child, her mind just wandered in class, and her parents thought that she was just not paying attention, and they tried to get her to pay attention, and they eventually found out that she had her ears were not good. She had a hearing impairment, and she just wasn't hearing the teacher, and she was bored to death. So once that was discovered and cleared up, this was back in the 60s, actually, they discovered she was very intelligent and wanted to learn, and she just didn't know that they were teaching her anything up front. So it's hard for them to recognize sometimes.
It is. The other eligibility criteria is not only does your child need to have a disability under one of these 13 categories, but that disability also has to be significantly impairing their educational progress. So, and their need of specially designed instruction as a result of that. So it's a two-pronged question. Because some children that have disabilities do not need modifications or change to their educational program.
I see. And the free evaluation would include that two-prong analysis?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
cool. One of the conclusions of the evaluation that the districts are required to make is whether the student is eligible under these statutes for special education services. They're also required to identify which eligibility category they're finding them eligible under.
Okay, so it really is a thorough analysis right up front there. I understand that there are even programs for infants and toddlers. Can you share how that program works?
Sure. The statute provides services for children 0 to 3, 3 to 5, and then the school-age children. For infants and toddlers, they're generally covered under the 0 to 3 and 3 to 5. Those services can be accessed by parents contacting, well, in Pennsylvania, they contact either their county mental health, mental retardation centers, which are the ones that receive the funding from the federal funding to provide these services. It doesn't mean that your child needs to be identified as having a mental health issue or mental retardation, and quite frankly, at that age, it's very difficult to make that diagnosis. But that's just the source of the funding stream. For parents who have preschool children ages 3 to 5 in Pennsylvania, you contact the intermediate unit for your county. Every county has an intermediate unit assigned which receives federal funding to provide services for kids in that age group. The type of services that are provided generally apply to the developmental stage of the child and their needs. They're they're not limited, but we generally see services in the realm of speech and language services, speech and language therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, social skills, instruction. And these are particularly important for children with autism because the language development skills, and children who are deaf and hard of hearing as well, the language skills are primarily developed in children between the ages of 0 to 5. So if you're missing that services in that time period, you're really behind the ball once you start kindergarten.
So that's why they do put government funds into those early years, because if you can help develop those basic skills early, you're going to have a lot less trouble when they go to school, it seems.
Yes. And the services provided to children in that age group are provided to them in their natural environment. Whether they're living at home, they have service providers coming to the house and providing those services in daycare centers, if that's where the child is during the course of the day, and in preschool when the child becomes preschool aged.
That's really important for parents to understand that, first of all, what you said, it doesn't mean that they're labeling their child with a mental health problem if they have to go to that particular office, and also that the help is given in environments that are comfortable for the child and familiar to the child. I would think that would be super important to parents to know that up front.
Absolutely.
Tanya, can you explain what an IEP plan is, and when and how it comes into the process?
Sure. The process begins, as I mentioned before, with a parent requesting an evaluation. Mm-hmm. After the district receives that request, they give the parent a permission to evaluate form. Once the parent signs it, it's a consent form to conduct the comprehensive evaluation into all areas of suspected need. As I mentioned before, speech and language, occupational therapy, physical therapy, whether there's a learning disability, mental health issues, behavioral needs, it's very comprehensive. Once the district receives the consent to perform the evaluation, they have 60 days to complete the evaluation and give the report to the parent. That report identifies whether the child is in need of special education services. Once that report is provided to the parent, the school district has 30 days to develop the IEP, the Individualized Education Plan. And what I always tell my clients is that they need to view this process as one would a medical inquiry. If someone goes to their doctor and says, I have these symptoms, I think something is wrong, the doctor runs tests to find out what they can rule out and what your true needs are. Once those tests are performed, they draw conclusions as to what your diagnosis is and what type of medicine you need. The IEP really is the medicine that that school would prescribe to the student dependent on their needs. So if they have a reading disability, the IEP would include specially designed instruction in reading. And the same holds true for math or written expression. There are also scientifically driven evaluations for children with behavioral needs. They're called functional behavioral assessments. With those assessments, the evaluator actually sits in the classroom with the student and observes them, makes minute-by-minute recordings of what the student is doing and what the rest of the class is doing, or a typically developing peer. And they try to determine what is triggering the child's behaviors, whether it's inattention or they're being disruptive in class, or they're just zoning out. They try to figure out what's happening in the classroom and how the student is responding to that. And then they develop a behavior plan which addresses the student's needs in terms of what they're achieving as a result of their behavior, but also teaches them how to replace that behavior with something more productive so that they can still access their education. The behavior plan would be part of the IEP.
It sounds very thorough. I know as a family counselor, I went to some IEP meetings and listened to the parents and the child and the teachers and administrators involved, and it can be very thorough and very helpful. And I remember in one case, a child wasn't particularly impressed. But it did help him get through school, and he did a lot better in life than he would have done without this approach. So I think it's a valuable program. At what point would a parent, does a parent contact a counselor, like myself in that case, to be there to help modulate the situation? And would you want an educational specialist? And at what time would an attorney be involved?
Well, it depends on the process. Generally, the parents can go through the process on their own without advocates or an attorney involved. When they make the request for the evaluation, the school district is required to conduct the evaluation in a timely manner and then meet with the parent at the IEP meeting. I would suggest that parents go through the process on their own to the extent that they can. They're able to do that. They can invite others to the IEP meeting that they think would provide helpful information and who are familiar with their child to help design the educational program. Those individuals could be a neighbor, a relative. It could be the a doctor who has known the student or the child for many years. They could participate in the meeting and give information. I would suggest getting an advocate or even contacting a law office only if the parent has tried to resolve some issues with the child's program and they're just not getting anywhere. They're not making any progress in terms of their child's program. We have a lot of parents come to us generally and say, you know, I've talked to the teacher and I've talked to the school many times. They tell me that my child is making progress in reading, but I just don't see it at home. She's still crying. She doesn't like to read. She wants me to read to her. She's very resistant. Things like that. But if the parent is finding that they're continuously trying to resolve the issue and they feel that they're not getting anywhere, I would suggest that that's the time to contact an advocate or an attorney.
That makes a lot of sense. So in general, if the parents are satisfied with the IEP and the people they're working with, then they don't have to have an attorney representing them in this process. But if they do get frustrated, then a consultation would be appropriate.
Yes, yes, and oftentimes it can be readily resolved if a third party comes in. To try to, I don't want to say mediate because that sounds very formal, but to try to resolve the issue.
Yeah, just another mind who that's familiar with these kinds of situations. We're up on another break, Danya, but I do want to talk more about some of the typical cases you've dealt with. So we'll be back in a moment or two.
Okay, thanks.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's R-A-N-D-Y-R-O-L-F-E.com. Your family will thank you.
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tanya Alvarado, a very experienced attorney in disability and educational appropriate education for children with disabilities, and we've been talking about the IEP process and what parents can do on their own. And I wanted to ask you, Tanya, what does a typical case look like, if there is such a thing? Can you give us some examples of the
Sure.
process you've had some families going through?
Sure. And if you would permit me, I did neglect to mention two other ways to resolve issues. The parents
Sure.
could use their mediation and a facilitated IEP meeting. Both processes are free of charge. They could ask the school district for either one to resolve issues. So I just wanted to make sure that was included.
Oh, that's great that they're free as well.
A typical case is difficult to describe. Typically, we have parents coming to us in desperation. They know it's been many years and the child hasn't made progress, or the child is frequently truant and just not going to school at all, and you know, therefore not accessing their program. We really have a gamut of cases. We have reading disabilities, cases of children with bipolar disorder. I have a client with a cochlear implant now that I'm representing who needs a sign language interpreter in the classroom so he could access the education. But generally, the parents are in a desperate state where they know their child is failing and they don't understand why.
That's very difficult. So what do you do for them? I know it, having practiced law in my faraway past, I know people usually come to lawyers when they are feeling desperate. And so what do you do for them at that point, besides trying to reassure them a little bit?
Right. Well, we always start with looking at the evaluation. Was the evaluation done properly, or was it comprehensive? Again, the evaluation has to evaluate every area of need and suspected areas of need. So if a child's having a reading disability, oftentimes there's a speech and language issue or a language processing issue that is occurring that may be contributing to that. Some children are demonstrating behavioral issues in response to a learning disability. And so, you know, you have both issues going on. So the first thing we do is try to make sure that we have a comprehensive evaluation. Sometimes we ask the parent to request another evaluation from the school district, but if the child has already been evaluated by the school district, the parents are entitled to request an independent educational evaluation. That is an evaluation where the school district pays for a private evaluator to evaluate the student. The private evaluator is chosen by the family. The school district does have to inform the parent what criteria or certifications that evaluator must have. But if the district has already evaluated the student and that evaluation report is not appropriate and not comprehensive, the parents may be entitled to an independent evaluation funded by the school district. Once the evaluation is complete and comprehensive, whether it's done by the school district or a private evaluator, we look at the results and the recommendations and determine whether in the educational program, the IEP, whether those services are being addressed or provided to the student. Sometimes reading services are being provided to a child with a reading disability, but it doesn't address the particular reading problem that the child is exhibiting. So that reading program has to be changed and individualized for that child. We do the same with children who have emotional needs, behavioral needs. We get a lot of cases where children are subjected to disciplinary procedures consistently, and they're in danger of being expelled from school. So in those situations, again, we begin with the evaluation and make sure all of the needs are identified, and then we move to the educational program, the IEP, to ensure that they're getting the services that they need. And services that the district provides are not only academic. They also are required to provide things that are called related services. Those services could include speech and language therapy, psychological services, physical therapy, parent training. If the parents need to understand and implement the IEP at home, that's typically true for kids who have behavioral needs. I'm looking very quickly through the statute, actually, to try to pick out some other interesting related services that must be provided by the school district. But it really is, it runs the gamut. And the key is to remember that it should be an individualized program to address your child's unique needs.
That's so important, and it's so great to be able to tell parents that they are entitled to this kind of individualized attention for a child that's not able to keep up with and benefit from the schooling. That's great. What do you find are the most difficult cases?
Sometimes the most difficult ones are the ones where the child has behavioral issues and is in danger of getting kicked out of school. Because in those situations, we have a school district which sometimes, very understandably, if the child is being aggressive within the classroom, is afraid that the child's going to harm other children. However, that child is not getting the appropriate services from the school district. So we do have to address the issue with the school district in a manner that addresses their concerns with other students' safety, but also and primarily addresses our client's concern with respect to the fact that they're not obtaining the appropriate services, and therefore some of the behaviors are a manifestation of the lack of appropriate educational programming for the student.
That's interesting. So it's sort of a almost a chicken and egg problem. If you have the teachers worried about how they may be affecting other students, they can almost be adversarial towards trying to help this child. But if they can get the help, then maybe it will ameliorate the risks. But I can see where it can be get pretty touchy there.
It can be, sometimes does become touchy, but usually after we intervene and some of the issues have become addressed, we do help the family regain confidence and trust in the school district, because sometimes that trust pattern has broken down.
Oh, that's a wonderful point. That's so important that the parents feel that they're working with the school to really help the child. Can you share one of your most satisfying cases recently or any time?
Oh, sure. I had a client who was diagnosed with autism, and he was in an autistic support class in his school district that only went to third grade. Then there were no other autistic support classes within the school district. So he was being bused starting fourth grade. He was being bused an hour and a half a day to across the county to a different school district on the other side of the county where he lived. 1.5 hour ride there, an hour and a half back. So 3 hours round trip just to get to school. He couldn't participate in extracurricular activities or after school activities because there were no school buses that were running at the time after he was finished with those activities. He also needed to get home due to his long bus ride relax a little bit, eat dinner, and then start homework, go to sleep. He was getting up about 5:30 in the morning so that he can be at school at 9 o'clock. And the family came to us at a time where he was moving to middle school, and the middle school was even further away, the autistic support program. And the parents just said it was going to be too much. And while he was in his elementary school, before third grade, he was in his neighborhood school with typically developing peers, and they said they wanted to bring him back to that environment. He had spent too much time away from the neighborhood. He didn't really have friends in the neighborhood anymore because he didn't see them. So we helped bring him back to his neighborhood school. They created services for him within his neighborhood school. One of the things the parents kept hearing was that they didn't have the appropriate classroom for him. And that's something under the statute that school districts should absolutely not be telling the parents, because it's no excuse to say that we don't have the right type of classroom setting to put your child in. They have to create a program that is appropriate for the child, not the other way around. So he came back to his middle school and was successfully reintegrated into the community. 4 years later, I got a phone call from his dad, who was telling me that for the first time he was invited to a party. He was now in high school. He was invited to a party by some children in his school, and it was the first time he was going, and he's just so excited. And he went to the party by himself. He had a great time. He texted his dad on the phone when he was ready to get picked up. You know, it's a little bit too much for him. And his dad went to pick him up and brought him home. And he said the entire time that he was transporting his son, his heart was beating in his chest, and he was just excited and scared and nervous. But he said, but that's the point where they wanted to be. They wanted him included in his community, and it certainly was being successful.
Oh, that's a wonderful story, and gives me goosebumps. Just the joy of a teenager being able to participate with his friends at a party. That's just really lovely, and I'm sure that was very satisfying to you to hear later on that he had been able to stay integrated through the high school experience because of the help you'd given to the family to get him closer to home. That's awesome.
It was wonderful.
Yes. With all the budget and funding cuts we're hearing about in school systems, particularly here in the state, but federal funding is being threatened as well, what do you think that might do to the parents that need to rely on these special education programs?
It's going to be an interesting process. Under the statute, the school districts have to provide the education that the students need. The budgeting constraints is not an excuse for a school district under the statute not to provide services. It is going to become increasingly difficult for many school districts given these budget cuts. I don't know what we will be facing. I fear that at some level there may be delays in identifying children with special needs because the system is going to be overburdened and underfunded, I don't know what to expect. We're keeping an eye on the developments for our clients and the families that are calling us, trying to gauge what is happening in each of the school districts. But it is going to be difficult, I think, for everyone involved.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, we'll be coming back and try to get on a more positive note. So please keep listening.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you.
The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolf has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
When you were young, did you feel free to daydream? Were you full of questions such as why, how, and what if? Did you allow yourself to be carefree, to dance and sing? Did you create just for fun? Want to feel that way again? Reclaim your natural curiosity and creativity with Dr. Carol Stahlkopf on Stargazing Stories, Sparking Your Creativity. Revitalize your life, work, and relationships. Be more playful, be bold, imagine, explore, and live more creatively every day. Tune in Wednesdays at 11 a.m. in the East, 8 a.m. in the West on Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolf. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolf@randyrolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
We're talking with Tanya Alvarado about special education programs and the importance of it for our children. And because of the threat to school budgets these days, we were talking at the break about the how important it is to meet the needs of children. And can you give me that statistic again, Tanya, that was so amazing about the correctional facilities?
Well, yes, and there are statistics now with respect to inmates at correctional facilities, and I don't know if I have the number accurate, but it's a staggering statistic. About 80 to 85% of inmates in our correctional facilities cannot read, or illiterate, or they were identified as being students in need of special education services in school. There are other research studies conducted that indicate children who do not get appropriate special education services as adults become underemployed, undereducated. Some are reliant on public assistance, and it really overburdens our financial abilities to provide for all of our citizens. And sometimes, in terms of representing my clients, I feel that it's important that the investment be made early while they're in their going through their educational programming and careers in order to avoid the results that we sometimes see with kids who do not get appropriate services. The state is spending the money one way or the other. It's either when they're adults or when they're in school and special education services, and it makes more sense to spend it now.
Yes, that just makes so much sense that you're really in the prevention area, and that's one of my favorite approaches to life in nutrition and my books of, you know, if you're communicating well with your children and giving them what they need in the early years, you have less to deal with when they become teenagers or young adults. And this is especially true for children with special needs. And so you're really stepping back and trying to prevent these problems that put people behind bars and make them unemployed and desperate out in the streets, and it just makes a whole lot of sense. So the ability to support these children is crucial, and I'm so excited that we've been able to tell parents about this. And parents worry about how long the process is, or added expense, or sending their child to a different school district. Can you go over that again about how it is something that they can, in a little more detail about something that they can do and their schools are obligated to do it?
Sure. One of the essential things that the IDEA provides is entitlement to a free, appropriate public education. And I'm emphasizing the word free. The evaluations are free. The services that are provided to the students in the educational setting are to be provided at no cost to the family. Once the district receives a signed consent to evaluate your child, they have 60 days to conduct the evaluation and issue the evaluation report, and then another 90 days to create the educational another 30 days to create the educational program. So that would be a total of 90 days, which are 3 months in school. It's about a third of the school year, and it can be a large part of the school year when we're talking about those types of percentages. However, it is a relatively short time frame. When you consider the type of evaluations and the comprehensiveness of the evaluations that's to be conducted.
Most cases, it doesn't last for years. It's something that can be done in 1 year, and the child doesn't
Absolutely.
Fall further behind. You're really moving them forward in that same year.
Correct.
That's awesome. And at what age do services terminate? When you think about, correctional facilities, when you have a child that's getting in trouble with the local police, how long can parents get this kind of support?
Well, children who are identified as in need of special education services have an entitlement to those services until they're 21.
Oh, great.
Unless they graduate from high school and receive a graduation diploma. So it's the earlier of when the child receives their high school diploma or when they turn 21.
Mm, that's wonderful. So you mentioned earlier that you work with the parents if they need to, which I think they would, but assuming they need to be involved and basically trained in a way to support their child in the home, is that something that the school also does?
There is, it's called a related service under the statute, and the district is required to provide parent counseling and training if they need it to help understand the IEP and implement aspects of it at home. And I'm not suggesting that the parent become the child's teacher, but for instance, children who have a need for repetition of information in order to understand what's being asked of them or in order to learn a specific task or a skill, the parent can get trained through parent counseling and training in the IEP to learn how to have their child repeat information, to actually implement that part of it at home. Children that have behavioral needs, also the parents can get training in terms of implementing a behavioral plan, which the child has in school, but some aspects of behaviors occur throughout the day. They just don't end at 3 o'clock at the dismissal time. But it's critical for parents, particularly for children with behavioral needs, because the behaviors have to be addressed consistently throughout the day in order for that modification to be successful. So that is an area where the parents should be asking for training.
Very good, very good. We just have a minute or two left, but I wanted to mention that you have a special proficiency with working with Spanish-speaking families. And are there attorneys in other jurisdictions that can help with minority speakers?
Yes, there are not many of us.
No, I don't think so.
I have met a couple. There's a small handful of attorneys. Some are non-native speakers who learned to speak Spanish in college and after, and some native speakers. But I can count on one hand how many people I've met that have that ability.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there's something that young lawyers can take a look at. Can you tell us how people can learn more about what you do and contact you and they want more of you?
Sure. They can visit the website to our office. The website is www.mcandrewslaw.com. We have a pretty extensive webpage that has information and articles regarding special education rights for parents and children, the types of services that are available, how to access those services. We also summarize some recent decisions that have been made that may impact some of the parents and the families that we feel that the parents should be aware of when they're advocating for their children's rights. We also have a profile page that talks a little bit about each of the attorneys. We have various offices in Pennsylvania. We have an office in Scranton, one in Reading. Our main office is in Berwyn, and in September we're opening an office in Delaware, in Wilmington, Delaware. So we're going to reach out in Delaware to try to help families there.
Oh, that's great. And people from other states, they can go to your website and get some insight there as well. And that's McAndrews, McAndrews. And I want to thank you so much, Tanya. This has been so informative, and I really hope parents have gotten a lot out of it, realizing that whatever their children's needs are, the school districts can help them. And people like yourself are dedicated to making sure that happens. So thank you so much.
Oh, and thank you for the opportunity to talk on your show. I've very impressed with the different topics that you've presented, and I think they're incredibly helpful to parents.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolf, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.